Hello, welcome to this episode of the Chamber Orchestra of Europe's podcast. I'm Simon Mundy, and in each episode I talk to somebody who has been an important figure in the history of the Chamber Orchestra of Europe over its 40 years' existence. Today I'm talking to Jaime Martin. These days, Jaime is a music director of the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra, and he's also chief conductor of the RTE National Symphony Orchestra in Ireland, and artistic director and principal conductor of the Gävle Symphony Orchestra in Sweden, and is an artistic advisor to Santander International Festival, which is closer to his home. Jaime Martin was for many years, however, principal flute of the Chamber Orchestra of Europe, and interestingly he took over that role from another flautist chap, Thierry Fischer, who has gone on to become a well-known conductor too. I started by asking how he first heard of the Chamber Orchestra of Europe.
Well, I heard the orchestra for the first time in Santander, which is my hometown, and at the Santander Festival. I think probably it was around 85. I think I was definitely a student at that time, and I remember it was an open air concert with Claudio Abbado. They did two concerts. I remember they did all the hits of the time with Claudio, like Pulcinella Suite, Brahms Serenades, Marijke Blankenstein played the Sinfonia Concertante with Dimmut Poppen, and you know, they did all the highlights. And I remember seeing a few of the musicians outside the square where the concert was going to be. And, you know, I hated them because they looked so incredibly confident, and they were looking so much on top of the world at that time. And I felt so incredibly small, and I remember thinking, oh, these terrible, terrible people. That was a extraordinary feeling with COE, you know, because when you were a European music student, at that time, COE was not even a dream, or, you know, something that you dream to play in, because somehow even dreams have to have a little bit of accessibility, or a dream has to be almost possible or something, I don't know. But I remember it was something so far away for me when I saw Chamber Orchestra of Europe on the stage. I thought, wow, this is the most incredible thing ever.
So how did it become possible for you?
Well, I finished studying in Holland, and then I moved to London. I was starting to freelance in London with different orchestras. And there was a tour in Spain with Heinz Holliger conducting. And then the second flute of the orchestra, Josin, was not available for that tour. So they thought, oh, well, why don't we ask Jaime, because he's Spanish, and then he can come and do second flute, and then he can show us the restaurants. Somebody in the wind section have met me somewhere, and thought, he can come. So I did second flute on that tour. I remember playing piccolo in Tombeau de Couperin and things like that. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed very much playing with the orchestra, but I cannot tell you how excited I was, like 2 weeks after the tour finished, when I got a call from Simon Fletcher saying, Jaime, would you like to come and do some work with us in Berlin to play principal flute? That was with Jean-Bernard Pommier, playing piano and conducting. We did the Brahms Serenade number 1, and he played the Chopin Piano Concerto. So this was my second time playing first flute. And then after that tour finished, I was asked to go to Graz to play with Hermann Kohl. That was the most incredible moment, I think, in my life. That particular summer, we recorded the Mozart, the Prague Symphony, and we did Schumann 3. So that was my first time. It was my third appearance with COE, but my first time with Hermann Kohl.
Thank you. Jaime was playing in the third movement of Mozart's 38th Symphony, The Prague, with Nicholas Harnoncourt conducting on Warner Classics. And by then, were you already a principal with any of the London orchestras?
I was already the principal flute of the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields. So, I was also the principal flute of the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra.
So Simon was not exactly picking you out off the streets of Santander, was he?
No, but you know, well, the thing is that probably it's difficult for you to understand it, but musicians in Europe or in the world, there are many, but musicians in Chamber Orchestra of Europe is only 60, 55. I think every young musician at that time, we, in the back of our mind, we had the hope or the illusion or the fantasy that maybe one day Simon was going to call to say, please, would you come and help us and play with us, please.
And then you did stay with the Chamber Orchestra of Europe for a very long time.
Many, many years. The thing is that the Chamber Orchestra of Europe is, you know, it is not the normal orchestra. I am not saying that it's because it's better or worse or for any particular reason, but it's the fact that every time we all meet together, we are away from home. So makes that the links between all of us are incredibly different and very, very strong. I mean, if you work in the London Symphony Orchestra or London Philharmonic Orchestra, it's a fantastic orchestra. It's an orchestra, of course, fantastic level. You finish your rehearsal, you go home, which I think is really lovely to do that. But in the Chamber Orchestra of Europe, we finish our rehearsals and then we go to the hotel where we are all together and we have to have a meal together. We have to find a laundrette together because, I mean, sometimes we were for 1 month in Salzburg or something.
Yes.
You know, there is a limit of how many times you can put laundry bags in the hotel without going.
Can get very expensive.
Exactly. So we had to do so many things together. So in the end, all of us were a group of people that we knew each other so well. And at the same time, we respected each other so much that even now, I find very difficult to explain because it's almost a way of life.
I'm interested in that difference between playing for the London Philharmonic, which you were principal flute of for many, many years, and the Chamber Orchestra of Europe. This idea that one is an orchestra that doesn't really travel very far, and the other, except of course on the occasional tour each year, and the other one is an orchestra which is never at home.
There is very good things about both ways. Actually, I left the Chamber Orchestra of Europe at some point in my life, and then I joined the London Philharmonic Orchestra, and at that time, that change was necessary for me, you know, for me and for my family, and it's something really wonderful also about being in a city, playing always for the same audience, you know, with London Philharmonic Orchestra. I was in the festival hall, and sometimes I felt slowly I could recognize some members of the audience, or some members of the audience could recognize me. With Chamber Orchestra of Europe was different in that sense. We didn't get the same connection with the audience. The connections were mainly with ourselves. And then we were a traveling group. But what I discovered with Chamber Orchestra of Europe is that wherever we were, every concert was like such occasion. Also, it was an occasion because for us it was an occasion. We were all leaving lots of things at home, families, you know, it's a very hard life. And then the moment when we arrive to Ferrara or to Graz or to Berlin to start rehearsing, suddenly we reconnected with our second lives. So it's almost like we had two lives. One is the life at home, and then suddenly it was the COE life. And as soon as we arrived to whatever city we were rehearsing, this new life started. The concerts were almost like we had to justify this effort. And I've never seen an orchestra being on fire as much as when I've been with Chamber Orchestra of Europe. It's, you know, sometimes we say we play like if our lives depended of that concert, but this was completely literal. I mean, we, not because of work, but also because we had to justify this huge effort we were all making. You know, the one thing for me about Chamber Orchestra of Europe, apart from the group of people playing together and how much I learned from all my colleagues, the other thing that was completely spectacular for me in Chamber Orchestra of Europe was the list of conductors we had and how inspiring was that for me, you know. I am saying that my first tour with Heinz Holliger, or then suddenly I met Harnoncourt. You know, I met Harnoncourt at the time when I was studying flute in The Hague. In The Hague at that time, it was like the Baroque cathedral of Europe. You know, Franz Brueggen was teaching in The Hague, Gustav Leonhard, Sigismund Kuijken, Wieland Kuijken. You know, suddenly in The Hague I could hear all these things about articulation, vibrato, and then, but I could only hear these things from the distance. And suddenly meeting Harnoncourt was like a revelation. But at the same time, we had Abado, Claudio Abado, which was a complete different style. You know, with Harnoncourt, you feel like you're in a classroom being told what to do. And actually, with Harnoncourt, very often I felt very stupid because I thought, of course it makes sense what he's saying. Why didn't I think about this before? I was annoyed with myself. It was so obvious. But with Claudio Abado, then you had the most incredible elegance in front of you. And then we would do the most beautiful Schubert symphonies, or we did these beautiful operas in Ferrara, we remember Barbara of Seville, or Don Giovanni. You know, Don Giovanni with Brin Terfel doing Leporello. And Simon Kingley's side doing Don Giovanni. I mean, that was incredible. Then we had the most unbelievable, one of my highlights of the Chamber Orchestra of Europe was a tour with George Solti. We did a tour in Europe with Così fan tutte, with, René Fleming and Sophie van Otter. I mean, you cannot believe that. We did the live recording for Decca in the Royal Festival Hall from two performances. The audiences, wherever we went, I think we were Cologne, Stuttgart, Frankfurt, Paris, London, was never under 15, 20 minutes of standing ovations. I mean, people were screaming. It was like the most incredible thing. During that tour with Solti, I remember in the middle of the tour in Paris, suddenly we did a Beethoven 7 with Norrington. I don't know why it happened like that. We arrived Norrington, we rehearsed, we did Beethoven 7, one of the most unbelievable performances of Beethoven 7 I've ever been part of with Norrington. But then at that time, then soon we started recording with Pierlo Gaimard, the piano concertos with Harnoncourt. Later on, we started doing Mozart piano concertos with him. Then András Schiff. You know, András Schiff for Chamber Orchestra of Europe was very important. We did so many tours in America, so many places. And Michiko Uchida, again, another of the pianists that we used to do so many concerts. I always loved Michiko. I loved the way she would stand up to conduct the introduction of a Mozart piano concerto. And she was like always, for her, the idea of sound, she was always telling the orchestra, I would love, for me, the ideal is if everything was above. I mean, she wanted everything lifted. It was so beautiful. And for me, these memories of working with people like that, one sentence of each of these people have created for me the most luxurious cocktail I could ever think of.
That was part of the overture to Mozart's Così fan tutte, conducted by Sir George Solti for Decca. And then something strange happened in 2013, and you put away the flute. And I wonder what prompted you to do that.
it was never one of my plans to become a conductor. It's funny because being in, of course, one of my ex-colleagues in Chamber Orchestra of Europe, Dougie Boyd, he was the principal oboe, I was sitting next to him. And at some point, suddenly he decided to become a conductor. And I remember thinking, this is the most natural thing, because Dougie was one of the greatest musicians I met until that time. And I thought, oh, of course, it makes sense that that he goes to conduct. My predecessor in the job, a Swiss flute player, Thierry Fischer, he became a conductor also. So it looked like for the Chamber Orchestra of Europe, lots of people decided to...
It's unusual, actually, because very often it's string players who become conductors, but it's with the Chamber Orchestra of Europe, it seems to be the wind section.
It's the wind section, yes, because, of course, we had the example with Harnoncourt. Harnoncourt was a cellist. Yes. With his Vienna Symphony Orchestra, and then became a conductor.
And Haitink was a violinist and then became a conductor. So it's obviously, but you're different, it seems.
Well, you know, Simon Rattle, he played percussion. And then,
well, yes.
I cannot tell you. I think it's complete chance. But, you know, I was always fascinated as a student. I was fascinated about conductors. I was fascinated about music. For me, to go to a concert and immediately after a few seconds to notice or detect why an orchestra sounds different today than yesterday, you know, with because of this conductor or that conductor. I was feeling that when I was a member of the orchestra. I was completely, absolutely fascinated. I would be in rehearsals looking at the orchestra, looking at the conductors, thinking, why is this happening now? I mean, why is it so different today? I think for many years you try to figure out what is the difference, that of course you are fascinated. But still, this came for me very, very late and came by chance. Somebody asked me to conduct a youth orchestra, which I did. I remember I called Dougie to say, look, Dougie, somebody asked me to conduct a youth orchestra. Do you think I should take some lessons before I do that? He said, nah, don't do that. Just go there. They know you're a flute player. Yes, it will be fine. So I went there, and I don't know if it was fine or not, but what I know is that very soon after that, I started getting invitations to conduct other orchestras.
And who did you first get a chance with? I mean, where did that change happen?
Well, I was asked to do a youth orchestra in a summer festival in the south of Spain. This happened because for many years they were trying to get me to go and teach flute, you know, to coach flute, but I couldn't do it. I was too busy. So one year they said, look, why don't you come and do the flutes? But if you would love to do that, why, you can conduct also. So I did that. And then my first few months after that, then there was a cancellation with an orchestra I used to work in Spain, the Orchestra of Cadaqués, which was a chamber orchestra. And we had a tour with Gennady Rozhestvensky, a few concerts in Madrid and a few other places. And then he canceled. And then we were trying to find a conductor for that. I was playing the flute in the orchestra. We were trying to find a conductor that the promoters in Spain would accept. So we thought about Neville Marriner, because Neville Marriner at that time, he was related to this orchestra. But the promoter in Madrid said, no, I cannot have Neville Marriner because next year is a big anniversary of the Academia San Martín de Fields, so we have to reserve the name for that. So, and we really thought, oh my God, we are going to lose the tour. And then Alfonso Ejón, the promoter of those concerts in Madrid, he said, you know, but I would give the concerts if you conduct. So in the end, it became half Neville, half me. So we did a concert in which Neville did the first half, and I did the second half. And then Neville Marriner very generously came. He did Beethoven 5 in the first half. And then he came on the stage with me at the beginning of the second half and passed me a baton. And then off I went to do Eroica. And in that concert was playing the flute Clara Andrada. Clara is now a principal flute of Chamber Orchestra.
So you handed over not only to a fellow Spaniard, but you also handed over to someone who had been a pupil of yours and who was playing in the orchestra as you conducted. It's all very seamless.
It was very seamless because Clara was studying with me at the Royal College of Music. I mean, she was at the time and she is now. I mean, she was a fantastic not only a fantastic musician and a fantastic flute player, but somebody so incredibly curious with the most incredible energy.
That was Jaime Martín conducting his successor as principal flute of the Chamber Orchestra of Europe, Clara Andrada, in the second movement of Carl Nielsen's flute concerto on the Ondine label. The orchestra was the Frankfurt Radio Symphony, of which Clara is also principal flute.
And I remember I brought her a few times to play second flute with me in Chamber Orchestra of Europe. Because, I mean, there are things in music that you cannot do in a normal teaching situation. And I remember I saw Clara recently, and she one of the things she remembers still from the first time she played in Chamber Orchestra of Europe, she said, oh, my God, the thing I cannot believe is how soft we all had to play and how loud we all had to play. You know, those extremes that actually when you are in a teaching somebody or you are playing your Mozart flute concerto, you play normal, but you never have to do the little extremes. You play a very long note, a high F sharp, four P's, and in tune. I mean, this is a very difficult thing to do, but it's the sort of thing we don't do at home too much. Suddenly you arrive in the orchestra, and then you get Harnoncourt in front of you saying, this is 10 times too loud. That's... Not two or three, no, 10 times too loud. The thing is that in the end, when you have a conductor like Harnoncourt telling you this is 10 times too loud, even if you think maybe he's exaggerating a little bit, you really want to do whatever you can to please him. And that's the amazing thing when you have a charismatic person in front of you. You would jump out of the window for this person. You know, and that's when a conductor can get that kind of connection with an orchestra. That's when things start happening in an extraordinary way. Everybody's trying their best.
The start of the second movement of Schumann's third symphony, the Rhenish, conducted by Niklas Harnoncourt for the Teldec label. And now you've just become the principal conductor of the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra, so it's a very, very different feel to things.
Well, of course it is very different. We all know that Europe and the States, in the way music is made in both places is very different. But actually, the one thing that it's incredibly clear in America is the music education is at a very incredibly high level. The universities in America produce absolutely fantastic, fantastic players. Maybe in general, there is the sense that in America, the number of decibels has to be a little bit higher than in Europe. But apart from that, I am always very impressed how, I mean, the part, the theory part, the analysis, all musicians are incredibly well prepared. And I really enjoy very much working in America because, we come from complete different traditions, but, you know, also in the last 20 years, 30 years, everybody is aware of what happens everywhere else, you know. In Los Angeles, of course, they have heard Chamber Orchestra of Europe, Beethoven recordings with Harnon Kool. And of course, we have heard in Europe Chicago Symphony doing Beethoven with Solti in the past. So I think we all know what everybody else does. But for me, working in America at the moment is a big pleasure.
We finish with a moment from Haydn's Symphony 102, with Jaime Martín as first flute and Claudio Bardo conducting. That's on Deutsche Grammophon. I'm Simon Mundy. Do join me again soon for another podcast about the Chamber Orchestra of Europe.